Roll call through the phone. So, Petrina?
So, yeah, so on the telephone, I'm expecting Joan. Are you there? No, we'll continue. Martin?
Yes, I'm right here.
You have the volume.
Thank you, Martin. I think we heard you, but you're very faint, so I'm not sure how to... Martin, could you just speak to us again to see if we can hear you more
yes.
clearly?
Can you hear me?
Very faintly.
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can up the volume.
Yeah,
I try to speak as loud as possible.
Mm. Oh, great. Yes.
Yep.
Oh.
Great. I think we'll be able to hear you now. Thank you. Thank you, Martin. Mikhail?
Yes, I'm here as well.
Hi, Mikhail. I'll just go back to Joan. John, have you joined us?
John O'Grady?
No. Sandra, are you on the line?
I am.
Thank you, Sandra. Reinhardt?
I'm on the line.
Thank you, Reinhardt. And also our observers, Jennifer?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Jennifer. Marie?
Yes, I'm here as well.
Thank you. And also Zbigniew?
Hello, I'm here as well.
Great. On video, we can see Bruce. Hi, Bruce. We can also...
Hi, Bruce.
you're very loud, Bruce, so we're going to try...
Is that a general comment or just specific to this call?
Carl, we can see you as well.
Yes.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. We can also see Yong So. Hi, Yong So. We can also see on video Jim. Hello, Jim. Hi. Also Bob. Hello, Bob. And also Bertrand.
Good afternoon to you all.
Hi, Bertrand. Bonnie, we're not seeing you on screen, but can you hear us?
Yeah, I cannot get the screen to work, so I've dialed in. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Okay. And finally, I'll just try John again. John, are you online?
Okay, no. And we've got Andrew here in person and Tony here in person.
Also, I just wanted to mention that Liz Figge from the staff is also on the telephone.
Is that true, Liz?
Yes. I'm here.
Be sure of our facts. Okay, and I think just a couple of reminders before we start the meeting in terms of sort of logistics. The first is that for those on the phone, when you're not speaking, if you could put your phones on mute, that's helpful. And the second thing is that it can be tricky to get people in the conversation if they are on the telephone. So what we have suggested is if you want to get into the conversation, if you could email Henry, hopefully you have his email address in the recent email that Petrina circulated to everybody, he will let me know that you want to get into the conversation, and so hopefully that will help us. The only other thing I wanted to say before we started was to say thank you for making yourselves available for this call. Bear with me with the logistics. I haven't done one of these meetings using video and phone before. And also just to say that we appreciate you making yourselves available for a short meeting, but we think that it's helpful to have this meeting to discuss this particular issue, particularly in light of the fact that it applies to IFRS 9 and we're so close now to the effective date of IFRS 9, so I think it's helpful from a market perspective if we can give some clarity as soon as possible on this question. Petrina, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on? No? Okay, so that leaves it to me to hand over to Craig, who's going to take us through agenda paper 2.
Thank you, Sue. In this paper, we address a submission on whether the holder of a financial instrument can use the presentation election in paragraph 4.1.4 of IFRS 9 for a financial instrument that has all the features and meets the conditions in paragraph 16A to 16D of IS 32. The submitter outlines two views in their submission. View one is that these instruments are not eligible for the presentation election, but view two says it's unclear whether the instruments are eligible for the election. As noted in paragraphs 20 to 22 of our paper, the presentation election in paragraph 4.1.4 of IFRS 9 is available only for particular investments in equity instruments, and the term equity instrument is defined in IS 32. Accordingly, we think the holder of a financial instrument that has all the features and meets the conditions in paragraph 16A to 16D of IES 32 cannot use the presentation election in paragraph 4.1.4 of IFRS 9 for that instrument. This is because such an instrument does not meet the definition of an equity instrument in IES 32. This conclusion is supported by the Board's explanation of its decision set out in paragraph BC 5.21 of IFRS 9. In previous meetings, we have brought some matters related to IFRS 9 to the committee to gather your feedback and advice before having a further discussion with the Board about how to proceed with the matter. However, as noted in paragraph 23 of our paper, we do not propose having such discussion with the Board on this topic because we think the Board's intentions are set out in paragraph BC 5.21 of IFRS 9. We think that the committee is able to discuss this topic and determine whether IFRS 9 provides an adequate basis for classifying the instruments described in the submission. Additionally, in line with the normal process, we will report a quick update to the Board at the next Board meeting. Board members who wish to comment on anything contained in that update will have the opportunity to do so at that time. Therefore, we recommend publishing a tentative agenda decision. The proposed wording is included in Appendix A of our paper. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation not to add this issue to your agenda, and if so, do you have any comments on the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A?
Okay, and before I open up for discussion, maybe I'll just reiterate one point that Craig's there made there about paragraph 23 so that people don't read more into it than what was intended. So we always report back to the Board on the discussions at the Interpretations Committee, so that will happen as usual. What we just wanted to make clear was what we were asking of the committee, because as you may remember recently when we talked about the prepayment alternatives that ultimately led to the exposure draft that we just published, we were very clear that we weren't actually asking the committee to make a decision on what standard setting activity, if anything, was required, but rather coming to the committee as a first step for input for the Board to make that decision about the standard setting activity. In contrast, in this case, the question is for the committee in terms of whether they agree with the next step being to issue a tentative agenda decision. So it's a different emphasis, and that was really the point we wanted to make in paragraph 23. With that, let's open for discussion.
Sue, do you want people on screen to raise their hands?
Yes, if people on the screen could put their hand up if they want to come in. People on the phone, if you email Henry, and people in the room. The usual approach. Okay, Bob.
I agree with the staff's recommendation and their analysis. I think the analysis is spot on. What is compelling for me is the BC paragraph that you pointed to, BC 5.21. I think it makes it clear, and that is referenced in the proposed tentative agenda decision. So I support the staff's recommendation and the tentative agenda decision.
Thanks, Bob. Bruce?
Thanks. I'm hoping I've moved the microphone away not too loud. good. I tell you, I've got a bit of a conflict with this paper, and I'll tell you why. I like the answer that these things aren't in there. The problem is, for me, the wording doesn't get there. And I'll take you through my thinking. If we look at IFRS 9 clearly points us to IS 32 and says, look there for the definition of an equity instrument. If we go to paragraph 11 in IS 32, it lays out all these things we need to put in. It lays out the definitions, etc. But within that paragraph, we've also referenced, even though it's in the liability definition, we've referenced paragraph 16C, we've referenced paragraph 16D, or A, B, 2D, and all these things have been put into it. Now, the challenge I've got is, we've got an entire standard. I mean, if you look at 32, it's effectively spent for most of its time looking at these definitions and how we break them up. How can we ignore, to me, I can't ignore the stuff in paragraph 16, because when I'm trying to determine whether something's an equity instrument or liability, I have to look at all the guidance available to me. That's a principle-based standard. If I then go into IS 32, it's saying, yes, there are various rules and various bits and pieces. We've got AGs, we've got appendices, we've got all these things, but when I look at the sum total of it, the output of that standard is to say to me, does something get classified as an equity instrument or as a liability? And what I'm saying is, if I kind of use this as a black box and I put all my instruments in through the top, when I split them out the bottom, it's either going to split out into the equity box or into the liability box. The problem is, this standard tells me this goes into the equity box, which means once I've put it into the equity box, now I'm trying to differentiate it in IFRS 9. Now, I accept that there's a bit of a challenge with what was said in the BC, so I'm a bit more in view too, that I think that there's actually an inconsistency. I like the answer we've got to, where you can't apply this. My problem is, if I went and applied the standards, I think that the guidance in 32 leads me to an equity instrument, and I think that's a lot more authoritative than the BC's and IFRS 9. So I've just got a bit of a challenge with where we've got to, honestly.
Sorry, Bruce, I was just going to, I suppose, make a couple of comments or just say them back to you, and because obviously you've gone into 32 and looked at this, and I suppose when we were looking at it, there's two things I think that obviously, first of all, it's under almost the definition of a financial liability, that those instruments that you know have all the features, meet the conditions in paragraph 16 as mentioned, and so it very clearly says, as an exception, an instrument that meets the definition of a financial liability is classified as an equity instrument. So it doesn't change the definition of an equity instrument, and it doesn't say these are equity instruments. It actually says they meet the definition of a financial liability. They are financial liabilities. However, in this case, they can be classified as an equity instrument, and actually mainly from the issuer's perspective, whereas obviously this question we have on the table is from the holder's perspective.
But I just guess that becomes a very slippery slope to take. I mean, there are a lot of things that meet the definition of financial instruments, but because of the scoping paragraphs, we kick them out. So I'm saying, you can't say, well, because it meets the definition of a financial instrument, it has to be an IFRS 9. We've got scoping there that scopes it out, and therefore says, even though these things meet the base definition, we've decided to treat them differently. Mm-hmm. I'm applying the same principle. Even though this meets the base definition, IS 32 tells me to treat it differently. It's not giving me a choice. My understanding of IS 32 is, when I read it, with these instruments, I have to account for them as equity instruments. I don't have a choice to account for them as liability. So if you're telling me I have to account for them as equity instruments, it's falling into this thing as an equity instrument for all intents and purposes under IS 32. If that was the opinion I had to give today, I would say this instrument is an equity instrument under the provisions of IS 32. Once I've done that, I've now got to go into IFRS 9, and IFRS 9 simply says to me, when I read the standard, well, this applies to, I've got this option for anything that meets the definition of an equity instrument under IS 32, which I've determined the status. But I think it's a very, very contradictory.
But I think that Petrina's point is a fair one, because it's quite clear, and I have to be careful when I say it's quite clear, because obviously it's my day job, but it says here, as an exception, an instrument that meets the definition of a financial liability is classified as an equity instrument. So we've been very careful to be clear we didn't amend the actual definition of an equity instrument. But maybe I'll let
I agree. As I say, you haven't amended the definition, but you've made us account for it as an equity instrument. And I'm saying that, to me, this is then therefore an equity instrument. Yeah, let's hear what people have to say.
Andrew?
Thanks. Just on the point we've just been talking about, I'm perhaps in the other camp, because I think that 32 clearly defines what a financial liability is and what an equity instrument is. And I agree with the view that it is, as an exception, something which is a financial liability is presented with inequity. And I think that the point of what the instrument is, as opposed to how you present it, is fundamentally important in this.
People who aren't speaking, please mute. Thank you.
No, that's okay. A couple of other things at this point. I did note the observation in the agenda paper in paragraph 19 that the board intention was that fair value through OCI would apply to strategic investments. However, I think that there's just a little note of caution that I'd sound there, because the option isn't in fact that much restricted. And the board itself noted in the... The board itself noted in the basis for conclusions that it didn't put a bright line or some kind of definition of what's strategic, because it would be too restrictive and it would be difficult to get the boundary right. So we have got a wider range of instruments than perhaps a narrow one that we are looking at here. The other thing that struck me when I was going through the paper is that this is not an issue which just applies to IFRS 9. With these type of instruments, you have an effect on earnings per share calculations, because the focus is on what's an equity instrument and what isn't. You also have potential effects when you look at what might otherwise be equity settled share based payments, because with these instruments they're not equity settled share based payments, because you're not settling them with equity instruments. So I thought that it might be helpful in the agenda decision to, perhaps in the interest of us being as helpful as we can, to note that it's not just an IFRS 9 issue, but it's one which goes more widely, which perhaps draws a little bit more attention to it, because it is quite pervasive. Admittedly, not such a huge range of instruments, but it is there and it comes up quite frequently.
I guess the only difference is most of those cases it's looking from the issuer perspective as opposed to the holder perspective, although I do agree with your comment.
It is, but one of the other associated points is that, unlike if you look at it through an IFRS 9 lens, this is not a new issue. It's one we've been dealing with before, and the conclusion that we've certainly run with is that these are not equity instruments, they're just presented within equity.
Okay, thank you, that's helpful. Reinhardt?
Hi there. I agree with the staff paper and the conclusions, as well as the wording of the agenda decision, and agree that that's an appropriate route to go. I think, similar to comments that were made by Andrew and Katrina, this, in my mind, is not a new issue, because there are a number of instruments that have been issued to date that have elements of equity and liability within them. And for example, we had, as the committee discussed, the issuer's presentation of non-viable contingent capital shares, and of course those have been issued, and there are, you know, institutions are holding those as financial instruments, as assets. And so I think, consistent with what Anders said, the conclusions in with respect to this specific instrument, I think, are more broadly applicable to other instruments. And my, you know, certainly we've taken the perspective that the conclusion conclusions reached on this issue apply consistently. And so, to the point that was made by Bruce with respect to the IAS 32 exception, the way I think of it is, when IAS 32 in the paragraph 16, et cetera, says you classify this instrument that otherwise meets the definition of a liability as equity, to me that's just a presentation issue. It doesn't, I think, consistent with what you know, you said, Sue and Petrina, my view would be it didn't change the definition of a liability. It's just that, for purposes of financial statement presentation, the board has made an exception that what would otherwise be a liability can't be presented as equity. And it was really, I think, a practical accommodation for certain entities that issue these instruments, and without that exception would not have had any equity, would have had the instruments that are issued presented entirely as liabilities. And so I see that as simply a financial statement presentation issue as opposed to a change in the definition of what is a financial liability. Those are my comments.
Thank you. Anybody else want to add anything?
Yeah, I can be very brief, and I agree with what pretty much exactly with what Reinhard just said. I think the exception in IS 32 is around, it says classification, it really is around presenting these things as equity. I think they still meet the definition of a financial liability, and therefore I'm comfortable with where the staff's got to in the analysis. I think they've got to the right answer, and I've no particular comments on the agenda decision.
Thank you.
I've just... Oh, sorry. Bertrand?
Yeah, to say that effectively I don't see having read the agenda paper and having read back the standards it refers to, I don't see how the outcome could be different. So I would effectively concur with the staff recommendation, even though two additional comments maybe. First, I do understand Bruce's comments, notably because some have questioned, when I've discussed that here in France, have questioned the meaning of classification. So. It's very clear in the discussions we have currently that it's a more a presentation issue than anything else, but still it may raise questions by some. So I do understand Bruce's comments. And answering to Andrew, I would have left the wording of the tentative agenda as it stands and not add too many emphasis on other standards that have not been dealt with in the agenda paper. Notably when it relates to earning per share, which is not necessarily an easy one.
Young Su?
Young Su is finding the connection difficult. So what I'll just do is Young Su has sent me an email with his view, and I'll just read that email out. So he said in case he's not able to participate, he just wanted to let us know that his opinion is to support the staff conclusion. BC 5.21 is clear on the issue. So if we follow the standard, we cannot but support the staff's conclusion.
John? John? Sorry, have we lost John O'Grady?
I think Carl has
okay, Carl, do you want to come in?
Yes, thanks. Just to say quickly, I also support the staff's conclusion, and especially because BC 5.21, 2 and 3 make it very clear.
Thank you very much.
I think Bruce wanted to come in.
Bruce?
Sorry, I clearly know which way this is going. I just want to make one comment. I know a lot of people have made a comment that this is a presentation issue. The only concern I had is that the standard says there that when we speak about the exception, it says an instrument meets the definition of financial liability is classified as an equity instrument. So it's not saying presented as, it's saying we classify it. as an equity instrument if it's got those features. That's what I'm saying is, it's not saying you just present, it's actually forcing us into classification, but I'll accept it where the masses seem to be going.
Kumar?
Just quickly, I agree where Bruce is going from the wording. I also picked up, it says classified, but you see, when people have come in, that's what has been put up colloquially in practice because it's more seen as a presentation rather than a classification because of the definition. The other point I would make, Bruce, is that if I look at IFRS 9, the focus is entirely on the definitions, whether you meet it, and that's what the whole thing with the italics does. It takes you back to the appendix. And from there, you have to, it says very clearly you must meet the definition of an equity instrument. And if I look at what is there in 16A, that's what makes it clear for me. I understand where you're coming from, and it ends up as equity, but what 16A makes it very clear that this is an exception, and it doesn't meet the definition of an equity instrument because it meets a definition of a liability. So I think that's where the cut is coming from. I understand where you're coming from, Bruce, and that's why I think the gender rejection wording would help. Some people might read it otherwise. I do not deny that, but for me, that is also a critical point because the focus is on the definitions.
Okay, thank you, Kumar.
I think it's a slippery slope, guys.
Okay, so what? I'll try John O'Grady one more time. No, he's lost his opportunity. Okay, in which case I think we will. Young Su.
Oh yes, I'm so glad I can talk. No, my connection was really bad, so I was not able to hear any of your discussion at all. But maybe let me just tell you my opinion. The staff conclusion, the paragraph on this issue, so that
Sorry, Young Su, we can't really hear you.
Your voice is all breaking. So can you hear me? You don't?
We can't hear you, sorry.
Should we suggest him that he dial in?
Perhaps you might want to dial in, Young Su, if you want to speak. That might be the best approach.
All right. Then I will try.
Is going to try and dial in?
I think he's going to try.
John can hear us, but we can't hear him. So.
John can hear.
Is there anyone else on the telephone who would want to comment?
It's me, Martin. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I only have the issue whether we really need this DC 5.21. Although it is right that the board is arguing has explained its view, this is in general not part of the endorsed accounting standard. And I personally believe that paragraph 11 of IAS 32 is sufficient. So my suggestion then would be overall not to do any reference to this basis of conclusion. Overall, I agree with the agenda decision, and I believe it's the right way to go.
Okay, I think the only challenge with that is while I absolutely agree with you that what's authoritative is not the basis, we do want to try and encourage people to look at the basis to give context for the requirements. So I think that's why the staff have been quite careful to choose their words and said this conclusion is supported by. So we're not so much relying on it, rather observing that is consistent with the analysis using the authoritative text. I think that's why the word supported has probably been used there.
And just to reiterate that, we wanted to quite carefully just say that only do the observation around paragraph 11 of IS 32 for the reason you make, Martin, that those are the authoritative words, and say that having observed what's in paragraph 11 of IS 32, the committee then reached its conclusion about the instrument, and then only after saying the committee had reached a conclusion sort of make the reference to the explanation of the decision and the basis.
Okay, I can't hear John or Young Soo, so I suggest that we probably vote on the decisions, and I'll do it in waves if I can. I'll start with the two IFRIC members, Interpretation Committee members in the room, and ask for a show of hands if you support the tentative agenda decision. That's two. And then next, could we please have a show of hands for those on the screen, those who support the tentative agenda decision? It's four. And then we'll go through the people on the phone. So, Martin, do you support the tentative agenda decision?
I'm supportive.
Mikhail?
Support.
Thank you. Sandy?
I'm supportive of the tentative agenda decision.
Thank you. I haven't heard Bonnie. Bonnie?
Yes, I'm supportive.
Thank you. Young Soo, are you on the line? No. And Reinhardt?
I support the agenda decision.
John, I sent an
email. And John is agreeing by email.
Young Soo also agreed by email.
And Young Soo has agreed by email. So, okay, so we'll go forward with the tentative agenda decision then. On the point that Andrew raised about the other references, are we going to leave the agenda decision as is?
So
we voted on the decision as it is.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not.
Okay,
I'm
don't feel strongly.
So,
okay, yeah. Great. All right. Katrina?
Okay, so it's agenda paper two. Thank you. The only other paper we have, of course, as we always do, is the work in progress paper, which is agenda paper three. You'll note.
Sorry, Katrina, before you go to the next, it's Bertrand speaking. Sorry, before you go to the next subject, have I understood correctly what Sue said during the introduction of the discussion with paragraph 23? Because I was really embarrassed by the way paragraph 23 of the agenda paper was written, saying that we do not propose to discuss this matter with the board. I would, on the contrary, on such an issue, have said it's the exact opposite. I.e., even though the BC have outlined very clearly what were at the time the board's intention, I would have asked the board to reiterate that they still stick to this initial intention. And I was wondering why this specific IFRS 9 subject is then treated differently from the other IFRS 9 subjects we've covered. I mean, I understand, but at the same time, the BC, the agenda paper refers to dates back quite a while. If I'm correct, it was in 2009. So maybe it's worthwhile asking again the board to reiterate their intention on this.
Maybe I'll just respond with a very specific point about why have we taken a different approach with this than the other IFRS 9 questions, and then I think Mary might want to come in as well. But if I contrast this with the most recent one that's fresh in my mind, it's the prepayments with negative compensation. And the difference for me between that case and the case we have here, and the reason why we've asked in this case for the committee to make the decision as opposed to giving input to the board to make a decision, was that, as is clearly reflected in IFRS 9, included in the basis for conclusions, this was something that was specifically looked at by the board when we wrote IFRS 9. And that for me is different to the negative compensation, which was not expressly considered by the board when we wrote IFRS 9. So it's a new piece of information. In the case of the negative compensation, that was a new piece of information the board hadn't looked at before, that for some entities could have quite a big impact, and that's why we thought the board needed to think about whether that was what they had intended. In contrast, in this case, even though I acknowledge not everybody might like the answer, it was something that the board did look at. And I think for me, certainly we will report back to the board as we always do with our discussions at the Interpretations Committee, but given that we're now nearly, you know, 6 months out from the implementation of IFRS 9, I think we should really be sort of flagging things for reconsideration only in unusual circumstances as opposed to routinely. So that for me is the difference. Mary, did you want to add to that?
Bertrand, I did want to add to that just in terms of stepping back and thinking about what's the normal process versus the unusual process. And for me, the normal process is for the Interpretation Committee to be the lead body on the issues submitted to it, and that it's more the exception when the Interpretation Committee instead asks the board to actively consider or reconsider something that the Interpretation Committee has discussed. And really, I can think of one instance, and it seems to all be tied to IFRS 9, this is my suspicious mind, but I can think of one instance in revenue recognition when the board was asked to actively discuss something that had been raised to the revenue, the TRG, after the last meeting, and it was more timing that sent it to the board. I'm saying it's an IFRS 9 plot, because it was about the interaction of IFRS 9 and IFRS 15. And now, as you know, Sue explained the reasons why, unusually, last time the board was asking the Interpretation Committee to advise it rather than take the lead. So for me, paragraph 23 in terms of wording might not have been great wording, but it was, to me, signaling just to return to the more normal, the normal routine in terms of Interpretation Committee taking the lead in discussing it. Always Interpretation Committee issues considered and tentative or final conclusions reach, actively reported to the board in a public board meeting, and that's the time for any board member who might have a concern to raise that or express a comment. So I think it's signaling a kind of return to more normal handling, and I would be concerned with suggesting an active rediscussion, because I think it would signal if the staff or the Interpretation Committee asking the board to reconsider everything the Interpretation Committee just had in front of it today would maybe cast some doubt on the Interpretation Committee process or consideration. And you know, what I take as a board observer at this meeting is a pretty solid majority supporting the analysis in the paper, and I think that's how it would be reported. But of course, any board member who has a concern or question, whether they were there when IFRS 9 was balloted or not, could raise that. So I think there's good interaction that way.
And I suppose, by the way, I'd only say, and maybe apologize for exactly the wording of paragraph 23, because I can see how it worded. It perhaps could have been read to say we're going to keep this secret from the board and not tell them anything, and that wasn't our, we clearly didn't word it, I think, as clearly as we should have, because as several people have said, we always report back anything the committee discusses to the board at a public meeting, and IFRIC update becomes part of the board paper package, so this, like everything else, will get reported back to the board in that format.
So with that, can we move on to agenda paper 3?
Yes, so work in progress as ever, as I mentioned. So the work in progress paper notes four new matters on that on sort of or that have been submitted but that haven't yet come to you for discussion. All of those will come for you to you for discussion at a future meeting. We've called them all new matters. Of course, one of them you will identify as a new. The associates under common control is one that was at the committee a number of years ago. It's where we agreed at the March meeting it would be one that we'd bring back for discussion, but we've just included it here together with the other new matters on the list. I'll also just mention that obviously since posting this paper, you'll probably be aware that we have had one further submission relating to promotional goods, and there's an outreach request has gone out on that, and you will have seen that. So again, that's another topic that you can expect to see come to a future meeting. I don't know if anyone has any particular questions on that.
Comments or questions from anybody? No? Okay, well, with that then, I'll draw this meeting to a close. Thank you everybody for participating. Apologies for those of you who... Bruce, do you want to come in?
Maybe he's just waving.
Maybe he's just waving.
Yes, he is just waving.
Just being friendly. Apologies to those who had trouble hearing and connecting. And we'll see you again in person in
June.
Thank you, everybody.